All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. We have Emily Wang here, CEO of Bento. Bento empowers B2B SaaS companies to create in-product customer onboarding flows. Emily, thank you so much for joining the show. I'm really excited to learn more about you and what you're working on. And just to jump right into it, first question for you is, what were you doing before you started Bento?
Many, many things.
Yeah.
Most relevantly, I was in product. Mm-hmm. So I went to business school thinking mm-hmm. I was going to do something in the luxury retail space.
Oh, really?
Hard pivoted into tech. I was a PM first at an e-commerce company called Teespring. And then I actually joined a company called Intercom.
Yeah.
When
wow.
The company was maybe less than 200 people globally.
Right.
I was a product manager on the growth team.
Yeah.
In San Francisco. Wild experience. Really, really wonderful. Learned a lot. Mm. And then after Intercom, I joined a company called Spoke as their head of product.
Mm-hmm.
And then after building out not only our product, but our product teams, I mm-hmm. decided to go and start my own venture. And that is what is now Bento.
I love that. I love that. When you were first going into your career and you said you were going into luxury products, is that correct? What were yeah. you putting your eyes to? What were you like, oh, if I could work for this company, it would be a dream?
Well, my summer during business school, you know, mm-hmm. you do internships. And I actually came out to San Francisco and I was mm-hmm. with the Sephora digital marketing team.
Oh, really?
It was super fun. And like, you know, you show up and there's free makeup on your desk every day.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought, you know, working for brands like Sephora or Saks Fifth Avenue and doing global retail would be really mm-hmm. interesting. I think part of what always drew me to retail is I think it taps into consumer psychology. Like,
yeah.
why do we buy the things we buy?
Yeah.
Most of it is not because we actually need it.
Right.
You feel compelled. You feel FOMO. You feel excitement.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we think about the projects we do at work or the products mm-hmm. we build
mm-hmm.
in a very methodical, logical way.
Right.
This is the
yeah.
problem we're solving. This is the solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, unless you're an API company, like the people you're building for are human.
Right. Yeah.
Humans who are doing their work, but they're also checking Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. The families.
Yeah. That's so I'm a frequenter of Sephora. I love their beauty products, especially, you know, improving the daily skin routine. What shifted you into technology, into software? What was like, was there an inspirational moment or just was it prescriptive? Was it didn't make sense? What shifted your career path?
I wanted to create.
Yeah.
I think that's true of probably a lot of people listening
yeah.
to this podcast. It's, you know, you can create strategies and decks and ideas. But when I was at Sephora, at the end of the day, I wasn't creating, right,
mm-hmm.
more experience. I wasn't creating the beauty products. And I wanted to, and I don't think, you know, my skills lend themselves well
yeah.
to creating beauty products.
Yeah.
But for experiences was something that I had also done
mm-hmm.
working with contractors to create my own projects and
apps. Yeah.
throughout the years. And so going into product management was this perfect bridge where you got
yeah.
to understand your users
mm-hmm. and
buying psychology.
But yeah.
you also got to work with all of these teams to build something at the end.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
for me has always been the hook.
Yeah.
Creating something that hadn't been there before.
Yeah. How's your being that you have a product background, a lot of the founders, I think, well, founders, first of all, have such a diverse amount of experience. Some come from sales, from engineering, from product. But I love to speak with product people who come from a product background because of how they view consumer psychology and their users and in a different perspective. Has your view and perspective of a user journey or a user experience within product, has that changed over time?
Yes. I feel like the answer has to be yes.
Correct.
One of the things that I'm sure you hear a lot about is people who talk about experiments. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In product, we run a lot of experiments. And that's not just A/B testing. It's every time you have a hypothesis and you ship a V1,
mm-hmm.
see what happens. That's an experiment.
Yeah.
And why do experiments fail? I mean, experiments fail because what you think will be true of your users
mm-hmm.
does not match what is true
yeah.
of your users.
Yeah.
We don't come up with experiments because we think they're terrible ideas. You ship them because you think they're
yeah.
good ideas.
Right.
And
yeah.
every time something fails, whether it fails 100% or 2%,
right.
you're learning something about how psychology or workflows or these things actually happen versus what you thought was going to happen.
Yeah. No, I love the experimental, well, the note on experiment because I do think about it as a lot of A/B testing. But, you know, as we iterate and move on, we take a lot of like user feedback to figure out new ways we can either move our product in a different direction or cater to our users' experience a little bit more. How do you view in terms of the ideas that you get for experimenting or moving your product in a certain direction? Is it a lot of customer feedback, user feedback, or do you kind of roadmap out for fairly long term and then kind of adjust along the way? What is it? Is it more immediate or is it something that's a little bit more long term and planned out?
I think in product, I've heard people say things like, oh, somebody is a design driven product person.
Yeah.
Data driven product person.
And yeah.
I mean, they're all just big simplifications, but I have always loved user research as a way to inform what we do. And that I think is particularly relevant in B2B SaaS.
Yeah.
As a consumer, you can run experiments.
Yeah.
Millions of end users, you can put up an A/B test and in, you know, 2 hours, right? You have a statistically significant outcome. In B2B SaaS, by and large, you can't really run A/B tests. You know, again, I think we were just starting to run A/B tests at Intercom within the product when I was on the growth team. And that was like year six of Intercom, right? And it was already a very well-known brand and product. But it's hard to run A/B tests in B2B SaaS because two coworkers using your product, they generally don't want to have radically different experiences.
Right. Yeah.
And so if you're isolating experiments at the company level, most SaaS companies don't have hundreds of thousands of customers.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think that's where research comes into play. You know, being able to ask questions, not just of, do you like this feature, but hopefully something more akin to, what are the problems you're trying to solve? How are you solving that today?
What's
painful about it?
Yeah.
You know, tell me about a product experience that you really loved. Why did you love that?
Sure.
Coming full circle. It gives you an opportunity not just to understand the logical problems, but the psychology, right, behind how people interpret what's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but I think that's why now, right, we're working on around onboarding and activation is so interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's more than just getting people to configure their system.
Yeah. Log on, upload it. Yeah, yeah. Upload your software. Yeah, all that.
You're trying to get people to feel, feel that sense of optimism, confidence, and hopefully even delight that your tool is going to help them.
Yeah,
what it is that they're
trying. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people have, at least early on in my career, I was always skeptical of a new software product that was just, you know, thrown on my desk because I was like, I don't know how this is going to interrupt my current workflow or add to it. And so I talking a little bit more about Bento, and what was your inspiration for starting Bento? And two, how has it changed that user experience for companies and their consumers or their clients or their users who they're catering to, their audience? How has Bento tackled that problem?
Yeah. Well, I think you said there's a good percentage of folks who listen to this podcast who are startup founders. So I'll actually share a little bit behind the company line.
I love it. Yeah.
How we came to be. But Bento actually went through Y Combinator 2 years ago as a completely different product. Bento in its original incarnation was a collaboration and productivity tool for product managers.
Got it.
And without getting too sidetracked, the long and the short is, you know, we didn't get to the kind of traction that we wanted to during YC.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like many founders, went back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Pivot.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're exploring the landscape of pivots, one of the more common questions that you reflect on is, what were the problems that I ran into, right?
Yeah.
First iteration.
Yeah.
And it turns out onboarding was one of them. What we did, like most early stage startups, was this very concierge one-to-one onboarding.
Yeah.
Now on a Zoom call, I hear about why you wanted to, again, hold Bento.
Right.
And get you set up. And I would feel so excited coming off of these calls, being like, oh, they totally got it.
Yeah.
Follow-up email.
Yeah.
And then I would log in and watch, you know, full story or any of these session reporters. I'd watch these full story sessions. Mm-hmm. A couple of days after, when people, you know, actually get ready to start using your product. And I would think, oh my gosh, why are they just clicking these random links or rather than, you know, buttons? They've completely forgotten what we talked about.
Yeah.
But that's just it, Julian. Like going back to psychology.
Yeah.
How much do we remember from every conversation we dial into? 5%?
Yeah. Not right? that much. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Our days are filled with context switching. And let's be honest, nobody's pulling up my email side by side with using the product and going step by step.
That's Right. It's like, what can I remember? How can I get back? Yeah. What did she say about this? I can't remember exactly. Right. And they kind of fumble through the product's experience.
Yeah, exactly. And look, documentation, this is not to knock on documentation of follow-up emails, but it's not there for me when I'm in the product.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, gosh, like, I really, really wish I had a way to just have in each person's product experience, almost like a recap of what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did what most startup founders do. I put in product tours.
Yeah.
And I put in pop-up modal and messages. And of course, I used Intercom because it was the product that I knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't work. It didn't work for initial onboarding. Because, Julian, what happened the last time? You got a bunch of pop-ups when you locked into a new app.
Exited them. Put them down. Yeah. I said, I can go through the tour myself. I'm okay.
Yeah. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, that thing would have been helpful now.
Yeah.
So that was the first issue, right? The first issue. And by the way, like, again, this is not a knock on the products that, you know, we built at Intercom or the products that the features that the Pendos and AppUse the world have, they're great. They're just being misused, I think, at the long end of the consumer's journey. When you are brand new, you're trying to remember, like, why am I here? Why am I here? What is my path to value? Not show me all your features.
Yeah.
I don't have 30 minutes to just
to go through everything
and learn all your features.
And,
you know, even when I was at Intercom, we natively built what is called the Quick Start Guide. It's what you land into when you sign up for Intercom for the first time.
Yeah.
It's a permanent page in your app. And we spent months designing and building and then iterating on it because we knew that onboarding into Intercom, just like onboarding into most B2B SaaS tools, doesn't happen in 20 seconds, which is like the length of time it takes for you to connect with door X.
Right. Yeah.
Pop-ups.
Yeah.
It takes days.
Mm-hmm.
Do a little bit. You coordinate with someone else on your team. Maybe a second person comes in to do part of it.
Right. Right.
And if it's a multi-day long actual experience, why would we design a form factor that is a
general? Yeah.
Those things don't match.
Right.
And we, as a very small team, didn't have the resources to natively build these onboarding checklists that
sure.
we had to iterate
on.
And so, yeah, that kind of was this moment where we were like, oh, this is a problem that actually every SaaS company we know of that we've experienced has to solve for.
Yeah.
Because onboarding is the bridge between your what people buy, right? The vision that gets them excited.
Yeah.
And then them actually getting the value in that bridge. And if you don't have that bridge, then everything collapses.
Yeah.
So that part was clear. And then I think there was this moment of saying, everyone has been solving this problem through this modality that doesn't match with people actually on board.
Yeah.
That was the first insight. And I'll keep the second part short. But the second insight was at Bendo, we have like three product principles. And one of them is we say, humans are not a bug. They are a feature if used correctly.
Love that.
And that goes back to this whole idea that, you know, we talk about product-led growth. We talk about self-serve. And like, there's attributes of that that are great. But if you're getting people to do change, right, like change management and workflow change, there's a lot to be said for humans being able to empathize with the other person. There's a lot to be said for humans being able to creatively problem solve or motivate. And so we wanted to build this kind of experience that humans, oftentimes customer success managers, could really, really have agency around. And so every experience you build in Bendo actually is paired with a customer success view. So CSM can go in there and they can complete steps on behalf of their customer. They can change everything. They can add next steps and homework in there.
Yeah.
They can really blend this human concierge call and what is in product and what we call at the end of the day, hybrid, right? Hybrid go-to-market.
I love that the, you know, I was just talking to another founder about creating like this educational component around the product that that their users are using. And I think so many companies are moving towards that direction. And it's amazing to hear how Bendo integrates within whatever product that you are serving your customers with to create that collaborative experience, because there are some things that you need done immediately that maybe you need your CSM to complete for you and then show you how to do it. And I feel as though a lot, like you said, people have that experience where I don't want to go through the quick start guide. I'm going to click next and then I'll figure it out myself. And then when there's problems, then they go to the FAQ that's hosted by Intercom. And then they try to, you know, troubleshoot and identify where that problem lies. How and if you can explain more, I'm super fascinated about how has Bento been able to work in tandem with human and technology to create a really efficient onboarding experience within the products that your customers have. How's that worked out?
Yeah. So one of the things that makes Bento really unique, going back to the whole people don't like pop-ups, is that you can embed Bento's components directly into your application. And so, for example, you can just land people there, right? One of our more recent customers, Correlated, is in this PLG data space, amazing team. And so they have a page called Getting Started. And when you land on the page, as you can on every single session, it's your onboarding guide. It's your like path to value. And Mira on our growth team actually recently did an analysis where she found that the embedded guides outperform pop-ups by over 4x.
Wow.
And it makes sense when you think about it, right? Which is like, if I just dismiss it and then it's gone, versus this is a page that reminds me every time I come in what I've already done and what's left in that path to value. And it allows me to actually go off and do those things. The former is disruptive and the latter is something that gives me context.
Yeah.
And then in terms of humans, another one of our customers, Fondo, they are a bookkeeping and accounting product and service mm-hmm. for a lot of startups. They used to have to wait several days between a contract being signed and a kickoff call. And now they've been able to shorten their onboarding to just a couple of days, even before the kickoff call, because people can land in the product immediately. They still do these calls just to check in and make sure, right, that expectations are set correctly, what's been uploaded is correct, and their customer success teams will go in there and uncheck steps that actually shouldn't have been completed, change the instructions as needed, and really kind of create this blended experience where for the end user, all I deal with is the application. It looks native. It looks like you built it yourself. Yeah. But behind the scenes, the product and the human workflows work side by side.
Yeah. What so is Bento reliant on products who are, I guess, dynamic in the sense that they change with their customer base? Or does it work with all products in different capacities to cater to multiple types of product that are, say, a little bit more structured? You know, I feel like most companies have some kind of not uniqueness, but customizability that they can use with their product and their consumer. But some companies are a little bit more rigid. Are you able to work with both in different ways?
The only requirement is that you have a web interface that people log into. So for like pure, you know, API products where your interactions are through mm-hmm. a terminal versus through a web app, that's where I would say we would draw a line. But where Bento is maybe most useful is if you have different personas or if your product is actually very modular. And that's because with Bento, you can build what we call choose your own adventure paths. Mm-hmm. Just because I know that your role equals admin doesn't mean I know if you're coming in to set up something or create a workflow. Mm-hmm. And so you can build these really beautiful landing experiences where the user actually says, all right, I'm sure to do X. And then their entire flow changes. And even within that, right, you can ask things like, which of these workflows or features do you want to start with? And based on what the user says, like the onboarding actually changes.
Yeah.
What we're also trying to do is not overwhelm the user with 28 steps. Like,
right.
Who wants that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love I can't remember how you coined the term, but it was like having it almost like the checklist within your workflow, and not that it's something that's either one click all or super prescribed, but it works with you as a consumer working with the product. I think that's, you know, for me, the ideal scenario when I'm using a new product, because, you know, I'm not ready to take all the overwhelming information and then learn. I'd rather learn it step by step and take it in small chunks and learn how to access it as I'm, you know, doing a certain activity or action. Tell me a little bit about the traction that you're seeing at Bento now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I talked a little bit about some of the customers who are using Bento. I think another one that we were really excited about is this company called Assembled. They do workplace staffing software. So again, a category that I think hasn't been touched in a long time. And it's exciting to see these amazing startup teams just reinvent, right, what hadn't been touched. But one of the things I thought was really cool about them is they actually have measured their time to activation for their, I think, SMB segment before Bento and after Bento. And before Bento, they had pop-up guides, right? So it's not like they had absolutely nothing. But the big issue is, like, yeah, pop-up guides sometimes pop up randomly, and two, they're ephemeral.
Right.
And after they launched Bento, their time to activation decreased by 25%, and their implementation call time went down by 75%.
Oh, wow.
It's not just getting people there faster, it's also with fewer calls, because if I'm a motivated user, which is the one thing that I think software is not great at solving, but if I'm a motivated user, right, and you're giving me you're setting my expectation about what's supposed to happen, and then you're giving me, right, these very quick ways to go and get started with maybe a little bit of help, right? That's what a lot of us need. We also have anecdotes. We have a customer, Ironclad. They do legal contracting software. And I think one of my favorite anecdotes is that they had a customer who had, I think, been in process for a couple of months and never really gotten much traction. And then on December 25th, Christmas, their main user just went in there and in one day completed all of their activation. And I think that goes back to the whole, like, if we gate everything on a customer success manager's calendar, you're always going to be playing calendar tag.
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody wants to work on Christmas, and we're not, you know, saying everyone should work on Christmas. But that's partly why, you know, we as product people, we try to build in these experiences to meet our users where they are and when they're ready.
Yeah, no, it's like people come into work and they prioritize the you know, top priority activity. And sometimes that doesn't involve what was yesterday's top priority activity, because every day it changes. So the offering of flexibility allows them to come at that problem when they need to solve it. And so that's just, you know, improving that capability is definitely something that I see is something that a lot of software companies need to focus on, because that's, you know, that's leading into customer retention and not having their customers actually utilize every feature. So it's hard to even know if what you built is correct, because somebody's not using every part of it. So I love how that offers that flexibility in the user experience. What are some of the biggest risks that Bento faces today?
Yeah, I think two things are always very top of mind. One is, you know, fighting the good fight around getting people to do fewer product tours at the beginning, at least. By the way, for all I knocked on product tours, I think when you have a very advanced feature or somebody who's already a more active customer, it can be a great experience, right, to let people understand what might happen. I just think they tend to get overused for, like, the initial welcome. But I would say a lot of people we talk to, they show up and they're like, I want product tours. And the whole conversation we have is like, tell me about the last time you experienced this. And, you know, we started off this whole conversation, Julian, around like psychology, right?
Right.
You know, product and engineering, yes, it's a lot of hard skills, but I think a lot of building a great product is just being a human, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And just saying like, but how does this actually feel to someone on the other side? So I think education on that side is something that I wouldn't say is a risk, but is something that we spend a lot of energy on. And then the second one is, I think a lot of companies push back on their onboarding or delay their onboarding and activation efforts. Look, it's never going to feel like as much of a burning fire as like your database going down.
Right.
Like there's certain things that happen where you're like, oh, I'm going to drop everything I'm doing and go do that. And onboarding doesn't tend to be that. One of our lead investors had this phrase that I loved. He said, it's the just below the fold problem.
Interesting. Describe
it. It's very important, the fold, right? You know, traditionally when you design marketing sites, you would look at how big of the browser, what shows up above or what shows below when you scroll. Then the more important stuff shows up higher.
Right.
And just below the fold is like, this is really important because, again, if people are buying but not using and activating, they're going to churn. They're not going to expand.
Yeah.
And again, in the world of SaaS, like your business model doesn't work. Yeah. But it's never, again, you know, the thing that's like taking down your site or your company in that day. So I think one of the other things we try to solve for is helping people understand that whether you see it or not, every company is actually solving for and already investing time in their onboarding. You're doing it because your CSMs are doing it, or your humans are doing it, whoever they are. That's the first order implication. The second order implication, all of that stuff that you had your engineers build, people aren't using it.
Yeah.
And so what was the point of spending cycles and cycles building it if no one is using it?
Right.
And then the third order implication is like, if your humans are doing it and it's inefficient and no one's using your product, then come renewal, you're going to have issues. And so you're paying for it already, whether it's explicitly recognized or not. And then what do we do? I mean, I think we try to make it easy. When you come into Bento, we obviously use Bento for our own onboarding. And that helps people see, you know, a way to bottle it out.
Sure.
There's lots of templates and best practices. We actually just published all of our Figma components in a community template to say,
I love that. Well,
even if you're not using onboarding, let's at least give you some great components to work with.
Yeah.
So you can design great experience. And just, again, show up with empathy and think about how to make our customers and our users' lives a little bit easier.
Yeah, I love the, you know, approaching it in the way that it's a more, I don't know, maybe humanistic approach. I don't know if that's the right, word, but empathetic approach, where you're trying to understand how the product makes someone's feel, not how it affects their productivity. Because I think those are two different things. We can always be productive, but not feel great about, you know, how we're using or how we're moving through it. But if we're feeling good and being productive, the ability to complete tasks and move things forward just multiplies by, you know, crazy amounts once you see it unfold. You know, and that being the focus of Bento and how you're approaching it, what's the long-term vision for Bento? Where do you see yourself growing in the market and within your...
I think it's actually so much what you just said.
Yeah.
We talk about the vision almost, I don't know if you've heard of like Maslow's hierarchy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
About how to solve for like food and shelter and
yep.
before you can solve for, you know, self-actualization. But, you know, for us, the food or shelter equivalent is like, all right, how do we make sure that our customers are able to decrease their time to activation, increase their net retention, you know, decrease maybe the amount of time that you're spending on repeated training. So all of those things and product metrics are critical for us, and we track them, right, for our customers. But long term, like, let's say we solve that for every SaaS company in the world, we improve everybody's NRR by like, you know, 20%. Hooray. But I want more than that.
Yeah.
You know, what I want is that story that you told at the beginning, Julia, where there's a sense of hesitation and skepticism when someone gives you a software tool.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from, we don't want to feel stupid.
Yeah.
And the reason I think a lot of us don't like the change that comes with adopting new software is you feel kind of stupid.
Yeah.
You go in, look around, you're like, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And I'm now upset at the product, but really I'm kind of like,
Yeah.
And the opposite of that is really, really great game design, right? Where like the levels are designed in a way that help you feel success and fun along the way. And you're feeling sufficiently challenged. Like, creating good challenge is really, really important, but not so much so that the person on the other side feels distraught. Yeah. And so, I mean, call it hokey, but I think for us, you know, one huge win is, what does it look like to just level up the entire baseline of what software adoption feels like, such that it feels fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
That more people touch software and say, like, okay, like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that was kind of fun. And like, oh, and to help me get my job done. Like,
yeah.
That would be the win.
No, I love the Maslow's hierarchy bit, because it really is like, how can I perform what I need to perform now and then think long term on my overall OKRs and metrics that I'm, you know, tied to for my job? And it really does trickle down to the day to day. And I love how, you know, you focus on the initial task at hand, which is feeling comfortable and then giving me rewards to, you know, learning a new product well. And then I'm also building my skill set and then performing better at my job, because it starts at the ground level and then it, you know, it compounds on itself. And just overall, love that approach. Bonus question. I always love to ask my guests, because it gives me some homework as well as the audience some homework. But what books or people have influenced you?
Well, before I dive into that one, you know, I think what you said is the reason we call all of this not just onboarding, but everboarding.
Everboarding.
We call it everboarding because it's not just about your initial setup, right? But it's like, once we get you a little bit activated, how do we help you discover all of the other ways that you can level up the way you adopt a product? And because most B2B SaaS tools aren't just used by a single user at a company. So even if you onboard that first person perfectly through handheld treaty, what are you going to do for persons 2, 3, 4, and right? Those people have terrible experiences.
Yeah.
So we talk about everboarding and credit where credit is due. The first person I heard that term from is my friend Jonathan Corbin, who actually leads customer success at HubSpot. So I guess he's somebody who has influenced both myself and Beto. And in terms of books, really wonderful book called Leadership and Self-Deception. Sounds
successful. Yeah, that's a great title. That's a clickable title. Sure.
Yeah, I probably reread it at least once a year because, again, memory of a goldfish. But it's a really, really empowering book because I think it frames the things that we feel maybe disempowered from at work or in any of our relationships where we feel victimized by how somebody else did something or said something, and really frames it around, you know, our own psychology and approach. Because at the end of the day, that's the only thing we can change.
Yeah.
Is how we view what's happening around us, to us, the work that we do. And I think in startups, again, going back to a bunch of your listeners being founders, you know, I think founder psychology is really, really hard to manage.
Yeah.
The days are very, very long and the months feel a little too short.
Yeah.
And luck has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
And so I think being able to just reorient around the agency we have, around how we show up for each other, it's really empowering. So highly recommend that one.
I love that. Well, I'm definitely going to look into that, especially, you know, I think books that help you kind of rediscover something new and lessons that you can you know, bring back or take in a different light. I always love books that you can do that. Yeah, memory of a goldfish here too. But I think you know, lessons change as experience changes as well. But last question for you: where can we find you? Where can we support Beto? Get your plugs in now. Where your Twitters, your LinkedIns, your websites? Yeah, tell us where we can support.
Well, we'll start with the easy one. The Beto website is trybento.co. That's a great place. And we're on LinkedIn as well as TryBento. Here we are also on Twitter, although full disclosure, I don't think we're active. I think the handle is TryBento_CO. And then as for myself, my handle is the same on everything. It's Emily Yidan, Yidan. And that's me.
I love it. Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining the show. I love learning about, you know, how you approach product and where Beto is and what brought you to being here. And I really hope that we see Beto grow and help teams onboard successfully and change this everboarding experience all in all. So thank you again for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.